There goes the neighborhood.
We got David Lefkowitz here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
September 22nd, 2009, to the 317th episode of a little show I like to call Dave's Gone By. I call it that, A, because I'm the host. My name is Dave Lefkowitz, and I'm a radio personality, journalist, theater critic, and humorist, hopefully, and gonna make your hour and 15 minutes pass as painlessly as possible, as I try and do every single time we do a program of Dave's Gone By. Also, call it that name because all our older shows are listenable at the website, davesgoneby.org. And remember, that's Dave like my name, davesgoneby.org. And if you go show by show, if you look at the listings of our archives, or you actually go and start listening to these shows, if you are that desperate, well, you'll find that every show is a little bit different. I mean, they tend to follow sometimes a particular kind of format. I mean, we'll do our Inside Broadway segment where we tell you all the big news of the Rialto on and off Broadway and maybe review a show or two. And we might also have a guest now and then. Everything from famous musicians like Peter Tork of the Monkees or folk singer Christine Lavin or Neil Sedaka. They've all been on the show. Or folks like filmmakers and theater people and some people who are even further afield than that. We'll do something like that. Sometimes we'll have a sketch or a song. Sometimes we'll play music. Sometimes we'll remember people who have recently left us in the arts and entertainments. And I don't know why I put that entertainments as plural. I guess because there are so many kinds of them. But that's what we try and do every week. We mix it up a little bit to keep it interesting, to keep it fun. And we've been doing it for 316 previous episodes of the show. So I like to think that we're kind of doing something right. But I mention all that to let you know that today is going to be a really cool, typically chock-filled episode. We've got all these different kinds of things going on, which is why you should stay tuned. First of all, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about my life in Greeley, Colorado, because I spent the first 45 and a half years of my life living in New York, be it in Brooklyn or Long Island or Manhattan. And so to move just 6 weeks ago was a huge stage and a big deal in my life. So I'm still getting the hang of things out here, and I like it very much. But there's all this stuff that I'm learning about and trying out. And so tonight, hopefully there will be time, you're not only going to hear about my visit to the local house of worship to kind of keep in touch with my brethren. I'm certainly not remotely a religious person, but it's kind of nice to know when you move to a place where you're a super, super teeny minority that you know, you're not quite the only one. And so we went to services, and something rather interesting happened there. I don't know. Trouble seems to follow me wherever I go. And also, I tried food. Now, I'm adventurous when it comes to meals. I will want to try different cuisines and different ways of making cuisines. And if I go to a foreign country or a foreign place, I'll look at the menu and try to order something I've never had before, never even heard of, if it's not too terribly disgusting. I'm not like that guy on, I guess, the Food Channel or whatever it is, where he goes to places and eats all the bugs covered in chocolate and caramel, or he'll eat a lobster in the shell, or whatever they do over there, the sugar-coated dung, which I have tried, by the way, and it's quite delicious, but I don't go quite there. And yet I did try something this week, something that is a real kind of Western delicacy, if that word could be used, called Rocky Mountain oysters. And some of you are chuckling because you know what those are, and those of you who aren't chuckling yet, well, you'll just have to listen in later in the program to find out what they are, how they're cooked, and how they taste it. I'll let you know. Also on tonight's program is more than just me walking around Colorado. Oh boy, so much more than that. Tonight on Dave's Gone By, we have Inside Broadway, as I mentioned before, where we've got news of what's going to be happening on Broadway this season, some pretty exciting things, and also this being right in the midst of the High Holy Days. I mean, last week was Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and then we're just a few days from Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement that we have. So a couple of things. Glad to be talking about going to synagogue last week, but what could be more Jewish and more appropriate for this time of year than to have a visit from the great Rabbi Saul Solomon of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. The rabbi is here with us. I'm so proud. It's the first time he's been on the air in quite a few months now. So he's ripping and raring to go. And he's got a guest. He will be talking to an actor named Bert Edwards. Bert Edwards is 81 years old, going absolutely strong. He has been on Broadway a couple of times, including appearing in the final tour, and then the tour came to Broadway, of The King and I with Yul Brynner. So he was up there on stage with the one and only in one of the great classic musicals of all-time Broadway. So I'm sure the rabbi will ask him some stuff about that. But the reason that the rabbi is talking to Bert Edwards is because he's going to be in a new off-Broadway show called Next Year in Jerusalem. So, you know, I'm kind of like Vince Scalzo in this way. I love it when it all kind of ties together in some semi-meaningful fashion. So you've got all the High Holiday stuff going on, and the rabbi, and the Jewish play, and me going to synagogue. It's kind of neat, plus the Broadway thing, so that ties in. And let's see what else. We do have to make time towards the end of the show for the sad news this past week of the passing of Mary Travers, of Peter, Paul, and Mary fame. This is really, you know, folk music was such an important part of my life in my school years, like junior high school and high school, before I kind of moved into rock and roll without really leaving folk behind. But there's a point when you kind of have to go from folk into the other thing because there's just more to it in a certain way. But boy, oh boy, for a couple of years there, I lived and breathed people like Tom Paxton, who was a guest on the show, Phil Oakes, Peter, Paul, and Mary. And so the loss of Mary is kind of a cultural touchstone, even though I'm a little younger than the folks who really were part of that era and affected by the movements that were going on during PPNM's heyday. But still, she made some terrific and still very, very touching music with Peter, Paul, and Mary. So we're going to hear some of it and say a proper farewell to Mary Travers towards the end of the show. But we've got to begin the show just reminding you that it is brought to you by some wonderful sponsors, including Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. The Toron family has owned Hewlett Minuteman Press since the 1970s. You know, there are Minutemans all over the country, but they're franchises, and this particular one in Hewlett, Long Island, on Broadway, right across from the Lomans. This one has been owned and operated by the wonderful Toron family since, 30-odd years now. And they're very great people, terrific to work with, fair prices, and they do a good job on copy jobs, big and small. And if you tell them Dave sent you from Dave's Gone By, you get 10% off any job. Hewlett, Minuteman Press, they're the kings. Also, this program is brought to you by Fancy Schmancy Balloons, which is an operation that Jeff Goodman, who is very often a guest or guest co-host on this radio program, I gotta stop calling it a radio program. It's an audio program now. It's a webisode. We still haven't really come up with a word for it. I mean, it's also a podcast, but podcast seems very limiting to me. I mean, I think it's great that people can download the show as a podcast and listen to it wherever. But I still think keeping it as this place to be and at your computer, put it on, listen to it. It's an audio-sode. I'll work on it. And if you have any suggestions as to what else to call it, nice ones, please, send them to davesgoneby@aol.com. That's D-A-V as in Victor, E-S, goneby@aol.com. Anyway, I was saying about Jeff Goodman, the practitioner, the proprietor of Fancy Schmancy Balloons, that it isn't just balloons. It isn't just that he goes there and makes maybe balloon animals or blows up some nice helium balloons for your party. These are like really nice Mylar design balloons, and there are centerpieces, the things that are on your table. So if you're doing a bar mitzvah or a christening or any kind of big party, and let's say you have a theme that you want, like baseball or the New York Jets or Broadway theater or Star Trek or Star Wars, whatever it is, he'll design the party and the way the whole thing looks. And also, if you're doing a party and you're starting from square one and you don't know what to do, give Jeff a call because he also knows caterers and DJs and everything you need to make your party spectacular. Shouldn't your event be a fancy schmancy event? Give Jeff a call at 516-797-3229. 516-797-3229. And this program is brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway, since 1944. Can't believe it. It's almost 66 years old now. Performing Arts Insider. It tells you everything, literally everything you need to know about Broadway off and off Broadway, as well as cabaret, opera, dance, and special events happening in New York City. There are calendar listings, so you know what's happening in New York day by day by day. And there are also very comprehensive listings that are alphabetical of every show on Broadway, all the shows playing off Broadway, how to contact the people that are involved in them. If you want to contact the producers or maybe do an interview with one of the actors, it's all in Performing Arts Insider. Please find out more at performingartsinsider.com, and also please go to davesgoneby.org to find out how you can get a really, really big discount on subscriptions to Performing Arts Insider because you are a Dave's Gone By listener. So keep listening to this rest of this episode of Dave's Gone By because we have the rabbi and Bert Edwards, and we've got Inside Broadway, and we've got me going to the temple and eating oysters, Rocky Mountain oysters, and saying farewell to Mary Travers. All that coming up. Don't go away.
Meow! I'm not an ordinary cat. I'm a copycat. I love to make copies. So my favorite place is Hewlett Minuteman Press. For 3 decades, they've been on Broadway in Hewlett, printing booklets, making business cards, designing wedding invitations, and making millions of copies. Meow! How good is Minuteman? Hey, I used to have one life. Now I've got 9. Hewlett Minuteman on Broadway opposite Lohman's. Tell him Toner the Copycat sent you for 10% off. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TotalTheater.com.
Yes, let us travel inside Broadway for news of the Rialto, all the stuff that's happening on the stages of New York. Well, I was kind of sad a couple of, week or two or three ago with the closing of Avenue Q, that Tony-winning, wonderful, hilarious musical, one of my favorite shows in recent years, closed on Broadway after, it ran 2,534 performances at the Golden Theater. But, every show has its day, and that had been going on since July 2003, and even, it was a move from off-Broadway. It started at the Vineyard Theater. So, 5 years is a nice long run, or 6 years is a nice long run for a show. But guess what? Avenue Q is not going away. They're actually going to do something that they're saying has never been done before. See, lots of shows, as I said, move from off-Broadway to Broadway. They become a hit, and there's so many audiences who want to see it that there's a lot more money to be made, and you can get a lot more people in if you move it to a bigger theater uptown. Well, this show has made a pile of money, of course, from its big Broadway move for all those years, and not to mention the touring stuff and everything else, but there's still a bunch of people who want to go see Avenue Q. So the producers are going to reopen the show virtually the same off-Broadway. It's going to be playing at New World Stages on West 50th Street starting on October 9th. And it's going to be an open run, which means if people keep coming to see it, they'll keep it going. And what's interesting is that New World Stages, the theater that they're going to, has 499 seats, which technically is one seat shy of what would turn it into a Broadway theater. One of the criteria of what decides in New York what is a Broadway theater and what isn't is how many seats there are. And so if it's 499 seats, it's not a Broadway theater. If it's 500, it is. So they're being very cagey about this, but I think that's lovely. I'm so happy the show is sticking around, and if you've never seen Avenue Q, by gosh, by all means, make your plans. Now you can even see it in an intimate, smaller space. It's probably going to be even funnier. So, yay! Some very happy news on Broadway. And also, a lot of people, Sondheim fans, are going to be happy about our second piece of news. As we said last week, Angela Lansbury and Catherine Zeta-Jones are going to co-star in a revival of A Little Night Music. Yep, it is now confirmed, and the show is going to be opening December 13th at Broadway's Walter Kerr Theater. As I guess we all know, A Little Night Music is the show that gave the world Send in the Clowns, and also A Weekend in the Country, and it is one of Sondheim's more popular shows. I think it's one of the few shows of his post, like, the Bernstein years and all that, that was a financial success. So probably going to sell a lot of tickets because you've got Lansbury. She won the Tony just last year for being in Blythe Spirit. And, of course, Catherine Zeta-Jones, the Tony winner, the Oscar winner for Chicago. So should be a real, real interesting ticket. Now, here's some stuff that's being worked on in the future. There's a show called Paradise, and who knows, you may want two tickets to Paradise at some point. The great Harold Prince, who directed Phantom of the Opera, and Susan Stroman, who directed and choreographed The Producers, are going to co-direct a show called Paradise Found. This is a new musical. It stars, did the cast here, John Cullum, Judy Kay, Emily Skinner, she was in Sideshow, and Shuler Hensley, who was in that revival of Oklahoma a couple of years ago, and, although his name is kind of a dirty word on this program, Mandy Patinkin. Although the cool thing is, Mandy Patinkin will be playing a eunuch. The show is kind of based on 1001 Nights, Arabian Nights. So Patinkin plays this eunuch who convinces the Shah, who has 139 wives, that his real soulmate will be number 140. Sounds kind of interesting. They're first just developing this, and they're going to do it out of town, and then going to try to bring it into New York this spring. The show Paradise Found, we will keep our eye on it. Also, here's a show that I'm kind of tickled about. William Finn and James Lapine, they're going to be working together. Now, Finn is the brilliant songwriter-composer who did Falsetto Land. He also did 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And, of course, James Lapine is a well-known playwright, director, book writer. He co-wrote Sunday in the Park with George with Stephen Sondheim. But Finn and Lapine are working now on a musical adaptation of Little Miss Sunshine, and they're going to be doing it at the Sundance Institute Theater Lab. I think that's just the perfect material for them. That's such a terrific little movie, and such a surprising left-field kind of comedy, and I hope it's just perfect for them. And just before we close out this quick installment of Inside Broadway, I just wanted to do a little bit of kudos and congratulations to Neil Patrick Harris for hosting the Emmy Awards. I didn't get to see them, but by all accounts, he did really great. He got terrific reviews. Now, he got that gig because he was such a knockout at the Tony Awards show when they had him. You know, and what's also nice is that the Emmy ratings and the Tony ratings were up a bit this year, too. So, you know, it's kind of nice when a real Broadway kid makes good. And the career that he's had, I mean, he started as a child star, as Doogie Howser, M.D., and, you know, you can end up doing that and nothing else with your life, or just spending your days in reality television. Or, no, he chose the better way. He started doing theater, really working on his acting chops. I think he was in Assassins on Broadway. He did Cabaret on Broadway. And now I think it's really great that he's getting this kind of acclaim. I think he's actually on the cover of New York Magazine this week. It's kind of a gross picture that I can't really look at, because he's, you know, you just see his face in full, and he's putting on lipstick, which is a bit gross. But it's saying, hey, he is being touted as the first real breakout star who is out and openly gay. Now, I can rack my brains for whatever and try and think of some others who would be. I mean, there's Harvey Fierstein, but he's sort of niche. And then there's maybe Paul Lynde, but that was always closeted, nudge, nudge, wink, wink sort of thing. So I don't know. Maybe he is. Maybe he isn't the first out gay heartthrob Hollywood, possibly leading man icon. All I know is that Peter Fitzgerald will likely be crushed. Anywho, that's Inside Broadway. We'll be back with more of Dave's Gone By right after this.
We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TogleTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. If you have no idea what to see on Broadway this season, have I got a magazine for you. Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway and beyond. Every show is listed with enough information to make you a theater expert, just like the professionals who've relied on PAI for 64 years. Get the most recent issue at PerformingArtsInsider.com. Dave's Gone By listeners get a steep discount on subscriptions, so visit PerformingArtsInsider.com for Broadway the best way.
When a man is born, he's born with the foreskin. But the complete man is to be without the foreskin.
Mazel tov, mazel tov, kinder, alle sein gesehen.
Congratulations!
Shalom, damn it, shalom everybody, happy new year to you, happy holidays to everyone. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon here, and I am so thrilled, I am so delighted and excited to be back on the radio. Well, it's not really the radio because it's just on the internet, so it doesn't count as much, but for me, it all counts because I'm able to reach you with the joy and the beauty of Yiddishkeit and all things Jewish, semi-Jewish, and in this particular case, not even particularly Jewish, because I have a guest, a goyish guest. I think this is the first time I've ever talked to one of these people. So forgive me if I'm a little flustered or I don't know what I'm saying. It's just I'm trying to protect what I have spiritually. I think I can do this, but you never know. That's why we tune in. Anywho, the person that I'm going to be talking to is a veteran actor. Someone who is now doing a play off Broadway in New York at a place called the Workshop Theater. Means it isn't quite ready yet, they're still workshopping it. I don't know, I'm just guessing on that. But the show, this is why I was attracted to this, it is a play. A dark and sad, but a little funny, but mostly sad play called Next Year in Jerusalem. And it takes place, the plot is in a Seder, too. So I'm very excited about this, and I'm excited to talk to one of the stars of this play. His name is Bert Edwards. He is not Jewish, but I welcome you anyway. Bert, how are you?
Hello there, Rabbi. How are you?
Oh, let me teach you a Jewish word. Let me teach you Shalom.
Shalom.
Say it again.
Shalom.
Now say it and mean it, like hello.
Shalom.
Now you're talking, goddammit. That's beautiful. That's wonderful. So how many years have you not been Jewish?
How many years? Until I tell you my actual age. It's 81.
Are you
81
really?
Years old.
Oh, mazel. But this is so lovely. This is exciting. And you still, can chew your own food. And you don't wear plastic underwear.
That's true so far.
And
how long that will last is anybody's guess.
But this is what you can get up there and do. A show? What is it, 8 times during a week?
No, this show is only 5 times a week. Remember, it's off Broadway.
Oh, it's off, it's 3 offs. Oh, good.
The equity contract, we can only do 5 shows a week.
Oh, and for how many weeks? When is this running?
It's very short. 3-4 week run. Because, we're contracted with equity, Actors Equity, so we have to abide by their rules.
Of course, this is
and
true.
And they allow only so many rehearsals and so many performances in this type of contract.
Please, you know that Hashem, that God and Moses, had 613 laws of Jewish life. Equity has 7,000. This I do not understand. Equity has 10 times more laws. Well, no, it doesn't, but you do the math. I don't have time. So, what drew you to this play besides the paycheck, which you may not even be getting?
Well, that's true. That's very true. No, it's just a beautiful play, I believe. And it's about an old gentleman who wanted to Poland. He was born in Poland, and he married his wife in Poland.
Okay.
And this was back in the 1940s. And he wanted to go to Israel to help build the country there.
Okay.
His wife resisted, but she did go. But after they'd been there for a while, she was determined to have her children in America.
Okay. Smart girl! Smart lady, yes?
Smart lady, smart lady. So they came up, they came to America. He had relatives in Brooklyn, and they settled in that area, and he became quite well off. He built a company of his own. His wife died and left two daughters, one of whom he gets along with beautifully, and one he doesn't get along with beautifully.
Do you know, I have 19 and a half children.
19 and a half?
Yes, and I don't get along with any of them. It's very sad.
Well, I hope you get some hope for the half-child that's coming along.
Possibly. Depends. If the head takes its proper shape at a certain point, it'll be all right. But I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm sorry about doing it. Continue, please.
Okay. Well, the play was written by a lady named Donna Leslie Goldstein.
Ah, there we go. That's my
there
kind of girl. Yeah.
Vaguely autobiographical. It's about her grandfather and cousins and things like that who settled in Brooklyn.
You know, I'm vaguely autobiographical, too.
Are you really?
Just vaguely, yes.
Just vaguely.
So they come to Brooklyn, you settle down with the children, one of whom is a beautiful, nice girl, and the other is, you should pardon the expression, a biatch. And
well, she's rather free-minded.
Oh, okay.
Put it that way.
A slut.
And
my favorite. No, not a, okay. Continue, I'm sorry.
Father, whose name is Abraham, that's me.
Yes, you.
Has tried to raise the girls so that they have comfortable, well-regulated life. And my oldest daughter, who is named Rahel.
Is named what?
Rahel.
Oh, you're trying. I like the way you... Let me teach you. I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but this is what the program is all about. Can you do the huh?
Say that again?
Can you do the huh?
The huh.
Oh, that's good.
How's that?
It's got a hook in there. It's Rahel.
Now, you tell me something, Rabbi.
Yes.
I have to say something. She was my beshet. Is that the correct pronunciation of that?
Well, I think you're overextending it, but that is the right word. It's beshet. Beshet.
Cut it down a bit.
Beshet, yeah. It's like beshet. It's not beshet. Not like Sonny Young Beshet. It's beshet. She's the one for you.
And I say, oh, I was kvelling.
Kvelling? That's very good. You're kvelling. You're happy. You're proud. Yes.
Yes.
What other words do you need to check?
I think that's the only one. You know, I was saying saber for a while instead of sabra.
No, sab. It's a very different things. The Arabs were using sabers to kill the people in the sabras.
That's
how it works.
I'm so glad they caught me on that one.
So am I. So, you're in Brooklyn. You got the children. What the hell happens?
Well, the oldest daughter, my favorite, Rahel, is a...
Rahel. Wait, how do they spell it? How do they spell that?
R-A-H-E-L.
Forgive me, you're right, it's Rahel. I thought it might be Rachel, but you're right, I'm sorry.
Well, everybody else calls her Rachel. So I figured I don't know. Anyway, it's written as Rahel, R-A-H-E-L.
Okay. All right, anyway, yes, sorry, my fault.
And she's married and has a charming daughter, but there's like 12 years difference between the two daughters, my daughters.
All right.
And the play picks up when I'm in my late 70s.
All right.
And I've established a good home in Brooklyn, in where is it? Not Brighton, but Manhattan Beach.
Okay. We say Manhattan Beach.
Manhattan Beach.
Much better. Okay. Yes.
Manhattan Beach.
Right. This explanation is longer than the play at this point. So what happens?
Well, it happens that the old man is dying, and they have the last.
Seder. You've never been to a Seder?
Seder.
Good, thank you. Have you ever been to one for real?
Never.
Really? In your 81 years,
I've
no
been
Jew?
To a bar mitzvah.
Well, all right, this is good.
Some I learned not to go too early to a bar mitzvah because they go on forever.
You just go for the food. That's the thing to do. So
that's what I say to my daughter when she works. Like, I see you just here for the food. No time for the prayer.
Pretty much. This is the... Come on, when Jews go to the synagogue on a Saturday morning, they all show up at 11:30 because they know at 11:45, the food is there. It's only the schmucks who show up at 9 to sit there for 3 hours waiting. What? Waiting to eat?
You've learned a lot, Rabbi Solomon.
I'm a wise old man, what can I tell you? I'm wise enough to know that, okay, you're at a Seder, you're old, you're dying, I'm not you personally.
And then there is a young, one of my lawyers is named Ariel Cohen, and he is from Israel, in America. And he rather disturbed me by saying that he wants to be an American. He thinks that, you know, being in Israel, and he fought there, and he thought he's glad he doesn't do it anymore. You know, and it really disturbs the old man.
Okay.
So they have quite a little set to with that. And but he becomes very attracted to my youngest daughter, who finally arrives at the Seder very late.
All right.
And they become an item.
Wait, how old is he?
He's 79.
And she's?
The young daughter?
Yes.
Oh, she's like 35. 30.
Okay, whoa! That kind of play, is it?
Also, the fellow that plays, there are flashbacks in this play.
All right.
This
play is 7.5 hours long.
Very nice play. But this fellow that plays Ariel Cohen, my lawyer, also plays me as a younger man in Israel.
Okay.
So there are flashbacks in those scenes. I'm a little too old to play myself as a young man.
Just a little.
So he plays those roles. And the girl that plays my wife is a lovely, lovely actress. And she sings, at the Seder, she sings in Hebrew, all of the, you know.
The prayers, uh-huh.
But, and then the little daughter does the four questions.
Right.
And I praise her for that and say it's better than last year and all that sort of thing. And as the play goes on, my lawyer friend is there, the young Ariel Cohen, and he and I get into this discussion, and rather heated discussion.
Yes.
About his feeling about the, I guess you would call it non-Zionist. What is a non-Zionist?
And it's basically Jews who are stupid enough not to believe in Israel. That's what I, that's my definition.
Not to believe in Israel.
Are Jews who, you have to understand, pardon me, they're, you're asking me for an explanation, I'm giving you one. There's Jews who feel that when Israel is existing now, it is keeping the end times from happening, and when all the Jews in all the world get to go to Israel and everything happens good, we shouldn't be in Israel yet. These are very stupid people who think that we really don't have a homeland, that it's a bad thing that we created one. But the rest of us, the Zionists, the smart Jews, say, no, we need a homeland or else we get wiped out entirely.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Right.
I thought I had it right. But for instance, one of the things he tells me is that Seder, this Israeli lawyer.
Yes.
It's 50 years ago, sir, and you are not Israeli. I am. What that means now is very different from what it meant to your generation. I have been hit by more rocks than I can count.
So am I.
Out of my breath, while grenades exploded too close to me, I could feel the higher air vibrate. I have no desire to live that way. I say next year on the Upper West Side, which is very offensive to the old man.
Well, okay, I understand. I see the conflict there, and it's a good conflict. I can absolutely...
I say, what is that, a joke? Some things, young man, are worth anything. Worth giving up your life for. You don't leave because it's ugly. That's what you have to stay. And it goes on from there.
Interesting. By the way, is that the accent? How long did it take you to work on the accent that you're using for the old man Abraham in this play next year in Jerusalem?
Well, not too bad. I mean, it comes pretty easily.
Did you talk to any Jews, or did you just come to you, or did you watch it?
Oh, I've done a lot of accents in my career.
Okay.
Of various kinds.
Now, speaking of accents, let's make a little time to talk about your previous roles, because there were other shows that you did that must have been shorter than this one, that you appeared in, like, such as you were on Broadway opposite Yul Brynner.
I was indeed.
Oh, my God. Burt Edwards, how old were you when this was 1985, correct?
Yeah, I was, what, 55?
Oh, so you were not quite a spring chicken, but you were...
No.
What was it like? Tell us some Yul Brynner stories.
Yul Brynner's last, final... You know, he did the play 3,000 times.
Yes.
From 1950 until the end of his life.
Right.
And this was his last tour and Broadway production. We toured for about 8 months in what we call a sit-down tour situation. It's playing cities for 4 or 5 weeks, big cities. And then he had contracted for 6 weeks six months in New York.
Right.
And we came in to New York, and he was getting sicker and sicker, and had to cut down on some of his songs, like Shall We Dance? They had to cut that in half.
And in fact, it's now, it was just, Shall We? That was, please go on.
So, I remember when we were playing St. Louis, and Mike Wallace came out to do an interview with him. And Ewell said, I want to do another little piece of this, which cannot be shown until after I die. And he did a piece about condemning cigarettes, pleading with people not to take up smoking.
Right.
And they did not show it until after his death. But when the play closed in 1985 in New York, he was very sick, very sick. And he had never missed a performance in his entire life until those last 3 weeks of the run. And, of course, he had an understudy, but they wouldn't allow the understudy to go on because, you know...
Everybody paid to see Yul Brynner, of course, yeah.
And it broke every record on Broadway at the time. But about a month or two after that, he was gone. He died.
But do you have any personal memories of him besides him coughing, perhaps, or any little anecdotes, any thoughts about him as a performer?
He was not terribly approachable.
Right, I heard that. Yeah.
A wonderful man. He was very good to me, but he could be a monster to some people.
Oh, tell me, who did he attack?
Well, like the mothers of the kids in the play that traveled with the show. He could be just fierce with them. The leading lady understudied him one time, and he was very unpleasant to her. He could just be a monster when he wanted to be.
Was there usually a reason, or was it just he was on bad cancer drugs, or just his personality?
I think it's mostly personality. He was a wonderful man. He really was.
Well, it was wonderful to you. I think
he was really wonderful to everybody, seeing that they were well paid, and everything was. It was first class. Working with him was first class. Every city we went into, the dressing room had to be painted brown. That was a peculiarity. I remember...
Maybe it's because he was coughing up nicotine and he didn't want it to show on the wall.
That makes sense, but it wasn't true.
Exactly. White brown.
And also another thing.
Yes?
He had bodyguards around him constantly. Two stage right, two stage left. And I thought, nobody knew why. But a New York one performance, my school scene was just before he enters. And as I was going off stage, a man crawled over the orchestra pit and said, he's my father, he's my father. And those bodyguards swept him away.
Yeah, I think stars live in a different universe. They really do. Not just the solar system, but there's just something about what they attract sometimes.
Very true, very true.
Now, speaking of attractive, you have appeared also in the theater with some great leading ladies of our time.
Yes.
Kim Hunter, Tammy Grimes, someone named Phyllis Thaxter, who I had no idea who it is.
No, Thaxter was.
I'm sorry, no, I'm not that old.
She was a wonderful actress back in MGM back in the 1940s.
All right.
And played a lot of semi-lead roles. She was never a big star, but she was well-known in her day. And Tammy Grimes, I got along very well with Tammy.
Good.
I liked her a lot.
All right, very good.
Very nice lady.
Good. What about Kim Hunter?
Kim was a divine lady. She really was very, very good. I would say of the eight ladies I played that show with.
Wait, which show?
It was The Cocktail Hour. A.R. Gurney's Cocktail Hour.
Yes, all right. Goyim know about cocktails.
Nancy Marchand in New York.
Nancy Marchand, right.
But of all of them that I played it with, Nancy was... Marchand was by head and shoulders the best. No question of that.
I hope the other ladies aren't listening right now.
I hope not either, but they were all wonderful in their way.
Now, what made her, if you were an acting teacher, if you were just a student of the form, how would you can say, she was the best, but why? What made her the best?
At the time I went into it, she'd been playing it for a year.
Okay.
And I took over for Keene Curtis, who was the original male lead in the play. But, so Nancy was absolutely familiar with the play, but she's was a very excellent actress. Nobody will dispute that.
No, I'm not saying, but I always want to know what makes a difference, say, between a fantastic actress and a really good actress. What is that quality?
That's a hard question, Rabbi.
Oh, well.
Very hard question.
I ask the hard questions, damn it.
A lot of it's instinct, and a lot of it's craft, training, a lot of it's just being who you are.
Well, what would you say, Bert Edwards, what would you say is your special quality as an actor? What do you bring to the table?
I hope it's honesty.
Okay.
That's what I try for, strive for, you know, to believe what I'm doing. And not to think of other things while you're on stage, but concentrate on your role.
Well, let me ask you, since you did the Cocktail Hour how many millions of times, was there a point when you're standing there after the 500th time and going, what's for dinner? You know, I gotta pay the bills.
No, never to me.
Always right there in the moment.
It was such wonderful pleasure to be doing it.
Is this true?
It's a lot, acting is a lot better than working in a dime store, you know.
Now, have you been able to be an actor consistently from when you started? Did you have to take other jobs, or was this always your only profession?
I've always taken on jobs. Often. For a year, I was a manager of the Automobile Club in Virginia.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
The travel department there for, that was about 10 years. So I've done other things. And in New York, I've done, you know, little jobs on the side here and there to support myself.
Of course.
And when I was in L.A., I did a lot of voiceover work, and that kept me going. And, you know, a lot of TV things and films and stuff like that, but nothing major.
And is it tough now that you are in your 80s? Do you find yourself up for more roles, fewer roles? Are you getting maybe more now than you were in your 50s? Because that's a tough
one. Many fewer.
Okay.
I'm out of the competition business now. I do this play because somebody asked me to do it. I don't go to auditions because, I mean, who wants an 80-year-old man? It's an insurance problem, for one thing. You know, they think you're going to die before you finish the show.
They should look at Michael Jackson. He was 50. No, I know what you're saying, but is it great to tread the boards again then? Does it feel like coming home when you step on the stage?
Oh, yes. Yes, it does. It's a pleasure, the greatest pleasure in the world. When you do something that you really want to do and have the opportunity to, I think this show is my swan song.
Oh, well,
I'm not crying about it, but
what? Are you in good condition? Are you healthy? Do you have all your eyes?
Although I'm just getting over a broken foot.
Oh, how'd you do that?
Oh, I tripped on something in my apartment while cleaning a house. But tomorrow they take the boot off. You know the boot you have to wear sometimes.
Oh yeah.
They take that off tomorrow and. I should be able to get into a shoe then.
Well, I want to see you dancing and running about that stage and having a wonderful time in next year in Jerusalem, this dark drama that's 95 hours long but sounds really, really good. Remind
Thank
us.
Thank you, Rabbi
Solomon. Is that the Workshop Theater when?
It runs from October 8th until October 31st. It's just a short run.
October 8th through the 31st. How can people get tickets to see you in this show?
They can call 212-695-4173, extension number 5.
Say that again, please.
Online,
again.
They can go to www.theatermania.com.
Oh, Theatermania, I know them well. Say the phone number again, please.
212-695-4173, extension 5.
Now, I never thought I would say this to a non-Jewish person. But, Bert, I look forward to seeing you next year in Jerusalem.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Happy New Year.
You don't have to pay big bucks on Broadway to enjoy a funny play. You could sit in the comfort of your living room or bedroom and read a whole book of hilarious comedies by the one and only me, Dave Lefkowitz, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with my unique humor, satire, and spoofery. If you like my show, you'll love my book, $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Buy it at davesgoneby.org, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. It says it all, doesn't it?
But give it to me every hour.
Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off.
Welcome back to Day It's Gone By. If you've been listening to the show the last couple of episodes, you'll know that I've been talking a lot about the big move that my wife and I made just a couple of weeks ago. We lived in New York all our lives, but my wife got a terrific job teaching out here, and since I do all the weird and myriad but non-desk-related things that I do, well, I was able to move out here with her up to northern Colorado. So being something of a fish out of water, I think it's kind of cool to be on this show and tell you some of my experiences being a New Yorker now confronted with the wilds of the upper semi-north middle plains west. Not really sure what you would call where we are. Just at the foothills of the Rockies. So most of it has been really, really good. I mean, in the 6 weeks that we've lived here, I think we've had two or three cold, rainy days. I mean, that's it. And every other day was either absolutely perfect, or it was hot, but not especially humid, so you could pretty much tolerate it. And we're talking in the middle of August for that kind of stuff. So, yeah, life's been sweet. There's the occasional little wrinkle, the fact that every time I take my bicycle out to go a mile or two, I have to check the tires at the end of it to see if I'm losing pressure, because they have these little nettles called goat grass, and nothing like the grass you get in Long Island, this soft, tender, sweet little grass that you can walk on barefoot. There's this weed here, and it's omnipresent, called goat grass, I guess because it's thorny and rough and tough like a goat horn, where it grows, and it's sort of grass or weed-like, but then it shoots off these little thorny things that are really like thumbtacks. Swear to God, they puncture tires like nothing. They just go through them like a knife through butter. And I've blown 3 or 4 tires by now, just in a month and a half, thanks to the wonderful goat grass of northern Colorado. How nice. And I never did mention also the great Greeley smell. People have commented on that of all the things I've talked about that I've been on here, moving and packing and unpacking and going around, you know, the big open spaces and the school and all of that, I didn't mention the fact that Greeley is kind of known for meat rendering. That's what they do. That's one of the main things, aside from farms and ag, that they've got out here. You know, once you're here, you don't say agriculture, you say ag. So they've got ag, and also plants that take meat and not only chop it up and make burgers and milk and whatever you got, but they render the fat from the meat. And for some reason, when they do that, and they also, you know, the farmers all fertilize their stuff. So at a point, usually at 5 in the afternoon, you get the Greeley smell, which is manure-ish and also rendered beef-ish and smells like horse poop-ish. You don't smell it so bad if you breathe through your mouth, but if you're a nose breather at all, it's not the best time to be around here. I mean, it's not overpowering, it's not overwhelming, and sometimes it can be there and you really don't even notice it unless you're outside and, you know, taking a whiff through your nose and it's like, oh boy, oh yeah, they're in the middle of doing something horrible to a cow right now. I can smell that. But it's one thing, it's the kind of thing, if you heard about it before you move to a town, you would go have serious reservations about moving to that town. It's like New Jersey. It's like all of New Jersey. Someone tells you, well, New Jersey's a garden state and it's beautiful. But, of course, if you happen to live near this factory, it really stinks all the time. You would go, okay, there are 49 other states I think I'd rather live in. But it's interesting how you get there and you adapt. And it's like, oh, today's a stinky day. It's a stinky afternoon in Greeley, and it only is for an hour or two, and then you go on about your business. And if you're indoors, you really don't notice it much at all. So, yeah, that's a bit of the Greeley stench that I've been warned about. And now that I've spoken about, I can say, okay, I've done it. I've talked about the Greeley stink. Now I can leave it go. What I also want to talk about is food, because I'm a foodie. I love all kinds of food. I know this episode has kind of a Jewish tincture, but I'm not kosher. Haven't been for many, many years. I'll eat anything that's put in front of me, or at least I'll try it. If I don't like it, I won't eat much of it, but I'll certainly give it a whirl. So I was very excited to go, first of all, to the farmer's market that they have in our town. They've got a farmer's market, at least in throughout the summer and early fall, twice a week, over by what used to be the train station, but is now just a depot and I think a chamber of commerce. And the real, actual, honest-to-God farmer's market, and we're not talking about, for the most part, farms that are funded and owned really by Monsanto. We're talking real local people with their real actual local produce in their fields, their few acres, and they bring out whatever they got. Their tomatoes this time of year, I'm seeing peaches, some apple, tons of corn, lots and lots of really fresh sweet corn out here. And they've also got other people. People have ranches. One person brings their frozen meat, and I bought some that was delicious. And another person had bison there, which I've tried before, but I was disappointed because sometimes at the farmer's market, I am told, they have yak meat. I don't know if anybody within the sound of my voice has ever tried yak meat. I'm not sure I really, well, as I said, I'll try anything, so I'm just curious. And I was so disappointed they weren't there. Because I've never tried a good loin of yak, you know, or even if they just have a yak burger, yak loaf, I don't know. Someone said that, someone told me when I asked them what yak is like. They said, well, it doesn't taste like meat. And this gave me pause for reasons that should be obvious. I mean, and they didn't say that it tastes like chicken. And they said it's a little sweeter than meat. And it really got me quite curious. So if anybody out there has tried yak, and really likes it, has ever had maybe yak Fu Young or yak Wellington, please email me at davesgoneby@aol.com and let me know. And let me know where I can get a really fine loin of yak or something like that. I would love to try it. Anywho, that's my one food story. So I never did get to try that yet. But what I did get to try was, probably actually a lot more common, but certainly not out east. Out east, we supposedly have more sophisticated palates. Ha ha. I mean, there are things that we just won't touch and won't try because they're too ooey. Well, I had the opportunity this past weekend to go to a bar, which is not something I ever really go to, but what happened was I missed Potato Day, and I was really upset about that. They have, in our town, a potato festival, which really isn't about potatoes at all. You go in, and they'll hand you a baked potato with all the fixings on it. Yay, okay, Potato Day. But it's really a more historical thing for the kids. There's face painting, you know, and there's people dressed the way they were 100 years ago when they were living in the town and turning yaks into leather and, you know, yak burgers and making shoes and teaching in one-room schoolhouses. It's all, you know, that kind of thing, which is a lot of fun, which is very nice, but the day that they had it was that one lousy, horrible, rainy, cold day that we've had here since I've been here. So I didn't want to go walking around in the middle of a, you know, icky rainstorm just to see some people dressed in clothing from 100 years ago. I passed on Potato Day, for which I feel some level of sorrow. So I wasn't going to miss the opportunity to go to Bruce's Bar in Severance, Colorado. Severance is about half hour away from where we live, and it was a town at one point not so long ago of just a couple of hundred people, but like everything else, it's been developing, and now they have 2,000 or 3,000, but still, it's a small town. It ain't got much. I saw the post office, and the post office is literally like a one-room schoolhouse. It's really, we're talking old country here, and they have The town is on the map because of this bar. This bar that I was told by the wonderful couple that we went with, Gwen and Jeff. Terrific couple, and they've been going there for years. And Jeff has known the place and known the previous owners. And he said that it was only until quite recently was an incredibly ramshackle little nothing. It was just, you know, when the rains would come, the roof hadn't been fixed in years, so you'd bring these 5-gallon buckets into the bar, and the rain would drip in the buckets, and you'd have your beer, and people would go there, they, in the area, they'd go out hunting, and they'd bring the goose to Bruce, and Bruce would, you know, skin it and peel it and freeze it and whatever, and give it back to them when they finished the beer or two, and then they'd go off and on their way. So it was like that for many years, and it became a local legend for that, and also because Bruce was kind of this gadfly of the town and running the bar as he saw fit without making the necessary repairs, because I guess he didn't have the money. But he also became known. His niche was serving something called Rocky Mountain oysters. These are not fish. These are not clams. These are not oysters. These are, as I think they also mentioned in the movie Cabaret, they talk about prairie oysters, but there she's just putting an egg in some gin or something like that. No, this is not that. This is a Rocky Mountain oyster, which means they're parts of a bowl, two parts, quite literally, that were hanging off the bowl, but are no longer. Now, every man listening to this program just crossed his legs. I know that. I just did it myself. I couldn't help myself. That's what they do. And before the animal rights activists get all head up and you get like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that to the poor bull. You understand that they're going to be castrating these animals anyway. They don't do it for necessarily the most righteous reasons, the way we castrate our pets, so that they don't overbreed and overreproduce, and also apparently, if you neuter your dog or pet because they're less likely to get cancer, blah, 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 blah. No, they neuter their bulls so that they're more passive, more easy to deal with. I guess they put on more flesh, so if you eat them, I don't know. All I know is that they do it anyway, and rather than throw the balls away, well, somebody figured, these might be tasty. And at some point, God bless them. If you're going to kill an animal, cook and eat and use as much as you possibly can. So if that's edible, go ahead and do it. And they take the nuts of the bowl and they fry them up. And they're called Rocky Mountain oysters. So our friends took us to Bruce's bar to sample this cuisine. Now, my wife, of course, it was nothing for her because she's a vegetarian, has been that way for about 3 years now. So there was no way in hell she was going to sample one of these. But I give her credit even for being in the same room as them. The big surprise is, I wasn't surprised that they came to the table breaded, because that's the way this particular place cooks them. They're deep fried in breading, much the way they do with, tempura if you're in a Japanese restaurant, or kind of a heavier thing like French fries or coated yucca plant. You might get that somewhere. But the thing that surprised the hell out of me was they're not round. You would figure they're being served the roundest thing in the universe, a pair of bull's nuts. And you figure they come to your table, breaded, round, you cut into them, kind of like part of the giblets of a turkey that you get, the stomach thing that they hang down. No, apparently the balls are so big that they're cut into strips and then fried. You couldn't actually fry a whole bull ball and make it tasty. You couldn't cut into it. It'd be too tough, or it won't cook all the way through. I really don't know the particulars, and I'm not about to study the particulars, but that was the big disappointment. They didn't look anything like testicles. They looked more like fried clam strips. And in a way, if you had told me, if you blindfolded me and told me that I was eating fried clam strips, I'm not sure I would have really known the difference. Because once you take anything and put it in batter and deep fry it in hot oil, it's really an excuse to eat batter and dipping sauce. Whatever happens to be inside the batter, and it could be fiberglass, doesn't really matter. You're eating batter and sauce. And you know what? It's very nice batter and sauce at Bruce's bar. They give you ketchup, and they also give you a ketchup mixed with horseradish, and also they have mustard there and some other dipping sauces. Can you take it? And they're yummy. I had two baskets of balls, ladies and gentlemen. And we went the night before. The real famous thing that Bruce's bar does is the Nut Run. They are part of this chain, apparently, where bikers, these people on their big Harley and other types of motorcycles, go from bar to bar and restaurant to restaurant throughout a certain region. All these places would be serving these Rocky Mountain oysters, these nuts, and they'll go and sample them and have some brewskis at each one, and it's called the Nut Run. So the day after we went to this restaurant. I'm sure there were like dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of motorcycles and all these bikers going around hoisting a few, listening to live music and eating testicles. So I don't know if there's irony in that, but God bless America either way. All I have to say in closing about this is that I have spent the last 25 years in the theater community. So this is nothing new to me. I am surrounded by nuts. We'll be back right after this.
Psst, you want to buy a watch? No? How about a dishwasher? Vacation to Europe? Well, what's wrong with selling my stuff this way? How else? Advertise on Dave's Gone By? Take a 30 or 60 second ad on the radio? I can't afford that. I can, and I'll reach thousands of listeners all over America? Well, how do I... Dave'sGoneBy.org has all the info. Rate card and everything? Done deal! Hey, before I go, wanna buy a raincoat full of watches?
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Time for a segment called Dave Says By. Kind of a sad segment that we have to do every now and again, where we say farewell to some people who made life better because of what they contributed to the world. And so a couple of people want to say farewell to this week on the show. First of all, I wish I could play it, but I haven't been able to find the CD with the song People Who Died on it. It's really a great classic punk, new wave, rock number, however you want to call it, by Jim Carroll. And Jim Carroll died this week. He certainly had his different his different modes of life. The successful author and poet and songwriter, and of course People Who Died is track that song down because it's so great. And really based on all these people he knew who were passing away right and left when he was younger because they were all junkies just like him. And he went through various stages of his life where he couldn't get rid of the drugs either. And he died rather young. I forget whether he made it to 60 or if it was just 50. I think he hit 60. But anyway, also, if you can give a listen to Bing Skelza's program on New York station WFUV from last week. I don't know if they still archive them. But check it out. He does a very nice tribute to Jim Carroll where he plays that song, and he also plays Carroll doing this live spoken poetry thing of recalling a real avant-garde performance that he did. Very, very funny stuff involving a cockroach. Really worth checking out. Wish I could play it for you here, but I don't have it. What I do have are a couple of songs by Mary Travers, Mary of Peter, Paul, and Mary, who was born on November 9th, 1936. She was born in Kentucky, but raised mostly in New York. In fact, it's kind of interesting that she was part of the whole Greenwich Village folk boom, and all these people who were migrating to the village from other places, because they just had to be part of that scene, she was there. She was really living in the village and taking singing lessons, and by the mid-1950s, she was already singing backup on an album or two of Pete Seeger and stuff that he was doing. I'm sure she took some of her poise and some of her vocal forwardness from Ronnie Gilbert of the Weavers, but of course she had a style and a sound all her own. And it's such a shame that she spent the last few years suffering from cancer. I mean, we thought, people who like their music and follow them, Peter, Paul, and Mary, that she would have died a couple of years ago. I mean, she did get that other lease on life. She was real, real sick, and then she beat cancer for a while. So that's terrific. But, you know, at some point, it wins in the end, and Mary did die at age 72 last week. So we're going to play some Peter, Paul, and Mary music, including the one song I think that most encapsulates her specialness for me. It's one of the more beautiful songs ever written, and this is a powerful version. I'm going to play the version off the very first album. It's self-titled, Peter, Paul, and Mary. If you go on YouTube, though, there is a clip of the three of them performing live in front of an audience some evening. It looks like they're performing outside, and it's shot in black and white, very beautifully and eerily, but it's also incredibly haunting. So if you get to YouTube, Peter, Paul, and Mary, look for the song 500 Miles and watch that clip, and damned if it's not going to raise the bumps on your flesh and maybe even bring a couple of tears to your eyes, because this song does that. It's called 500 Miles, and here's Peter Paul and the late Mary Travers. About 15 years ago, they were doing a Christmas concert in New York, and I was interested in seeing them, but I kind of had to drag myself because I'm not really into Christmas music at all for lots of reasons. And you know, as much as I really wanted to see Peter, Paul, and Mary, they were in some level past their heyday. It was great that they were back together, but there was something a little bit icky and corny about what they're doing. There's certainly a sentimental and occasionally gooey aspect to their work, but seeing them in concert was so special and so sweet. And yes, there's a little sentimentality there, a little gooiness, but there's a lot of humor that was unexpected, especially Paul is quite the comedian. And then just hearing them all together singing and their various personalities and the strength of Mary Travers out there, I wouldn't have traded that night for a lot of other things in my life. So gotta bid farewell to one of the folk greats, and as I said earlier in the program, folk music was so important to me in my early musical life, and Peter, Paul, and Mary were right, absolutely right there. I mean, I remember listening to WKTU-FM in New York for a while. They were a wonderful station playing mellow rock and real folk music, and you know, a little piece of me died one day when I was sitting around doing whatever, I think it was playing solitaire or something, listening to KTU and realizing that the last couple of songs they played were disco music. And I said, well, did the station dial flip, or did something happen, or is there some kind of weird thing going on? And it was just like that. It was this instantaneous format change, and it was all gone. You know, no acknowledgement, and no more Tom Paxton, and no more Weavers, and no more John Denver, and no more Peter, Paul, and Mary. So there was that sad moment of a loss, And there's an even bigger one now. But we certainly honor and miss the voice and the presence of Mary Travers. And we will be right back.
You have asked me why the days fly by so quickly, and why each one feels no different from the last. And you say that you are fearful for the future. You have grown suspicious of the past. And you wonder if the dreams we shared together have abandoned us, or we abandoned them. And you cast about and try to find new meaning so that you can feel that closeness once again. Carry on, my sweet survivor. Carry on, my lonely friend. Don't give up on the dream, and don't you let it end. Carry on, my sweet survivor. Oh, you know that something's gone. Everything that matters, carry on.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Time to do our farewells here. Just reminding you that this program is brought to you by Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway, located at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island. And remember, every Dave's Gone By listener gets 10% off any job, big or small, at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Program's also brought to you by Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party and decorating needs. Shouldn't your event be Fancy Schmancy? Call 516-797-3229 and ask for Jeff. 516-797-3229. And Dave's Gone By is also brought to you by Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. Every single aspect of Broadway and off-Broadway and everything going on the stages of New York, from cabaret shows to big awards and events, Performing Arts Insider. And visit PerformingArtsInsider.com for all the information about how you can subscribe to this terrific magazine. Be sure to visit also TotalTheater.com, the producer of this show. There are 2,000-plus theater reviews up there now, and 300 feature stories, plus so much more. You got to check out TotalTheater.com. Also, DavesGoneBy.org. That is where you find out about this show. See pictures of me and find out about all the guests that we've had over the years. And, of course, it's the place to hear our archives. Hundreds of our episodes are available to stream or podcast, just like this one, absolutely free, anytime at all. Just go to davesgoneby.org. Also, please check out YouTube for Shalom Dammit. That's the TV show that Rabbi Saul Solomon did a year or so ago. They're all up there, all 10 episodes. They're divided into pieces. But, you know, you watch piece after piece, you can catch all the shows of Shalom Dammit, featuring our own Rabbi Saul Solomon. And we want to thank Rabbi Saul for being here tonight and also for interviewing Bert Edwards. Catch him in Next Year in Jerusalem, playing at the Workshop Theater October 8th through October 31st. Go to workshoptheater.org to find out more. I want to thank Gwen and Jeff, our good friends, who made it possible for us to get to Bruce's Bar in Severance, Colorado. I want to give a shout-out to the aforementioned Jeff Goodman in Las Vegas. I want to wish my mom and dad a very, very happy Rosh Hashanah and a very good, easy fast on Yom Kippur. Also, I want to thank Mama and Papa Weil, my terrific in-laws, and the wife that I love and adore so much, Joyce. Well, afraid we've got to go. I know it's the equinox, so make sure you stand an egg on its head or its tail or whatever you have to do to keep the egg upright. we go with something appropriate for the season and the sadness of it and the loss of Mary Travers. It's time to pick the flowers of the Daverhood, but we will be back very soon for the 318th episode of Days Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night, good knocks, and gone by.